Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where we're partially made of concrete and have no hearts. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 102 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing the season 6 premiere of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. entitled Missing Pieces, which aired May 10th, 2019.
And it's no surprise that this episode was written by Jed Whedon and Marissa Tangerowen, but it was directed by Clark Gregg. And I just think it is definitely evident that he put a lot of heart into it. And we're glad that Clark Gregg is doing more than just his new character in this opening episode of the season. But Dave, we're back after a super long hiatus. I mean, it already felt kind of long when it was just the summer we had to wait, but we've been out for a year and a half or a full year.
Has it really been that long? My gosh.
Yeah.
I guess because we work together every week anyway on other projects, it doesn't seem as long. But, you mentioned Clark Gregg directing, and I just wish they didn't leak as much information as they do.
Oh, yeah? Like which in particular?
Well, about his role in this coming season.
Yeah, that's true. We did get a little bit too much information about Sarge than we needed to know ahead of time, but maybe there were some listeners out there that were able to stay spoiler-free. I know there's a few that like to do that. But yeah, they had a tough time reining it in. But we're so happy that the show is back. Even though it's only for 13 episodes, we've got a lot planned for this season of The Sandbox. We're going to do the same format that we've been doing, kind of shorter discussions and leaving it mostly to the listener feedback segment. This particular premiere discussion is going to be different from the standpoint of the feedback is coming in after we're recording this, because for the first time in 5 years of doing this podcast, ABC finally got us screeners. And was it great, Dave, to be able to enjoy a rewatch at your leisure and take notes for it without being rushed?
Well, it absolutely was. And again, it depends on what night of the week the show airs. Obviously, it went to Friday nights, and then we're recording on Sunday, which, you know, is not always convenient. But yeah, as you said, if the screeners keep coming, it's going to make our job a lot easier.
Yeah, with the exception, what I was getting to there was the fact that this particular premiere is happening the Friday before Mother's Day. And so normally we would record on Sunday, 2 days after the broadcast, so that we would have time to get listener feedback. But unfortunately, that's kind of not working too well in our schedules. So Dave and I are going to do a listener feedback segment a little differently this time, where we will record them as they come in after this podcast has been recorded. And so you'll hear commentary from Dave and I separately at our convenience, just based on our schedule. But it's actually hopefully going to turn out kind of fun and an enjoyable way to do it this time. So we'll see how that goes. But the other thing that this new access has given us, not just the screeners, but also access to the people behind the scenes themselves. We've never really dared dream of interviewing anyone from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for The Sandbox, but our Den of Geek connection includes not only me writing reviews for each episode, which I'm kind of daunted by that task, but also we just hours ago spoke to the showrunners of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Marissa Tangerowen, Jed Whedon, and Jeff Bell for our other podcast, Sci-Fi Fidelity. So that was very exciting, Dave.
Yeah. As you said, it's sometimes difficult to get them to tell us as much as we'd like them to tell us. And we understand that. They want to keep things exciting and fresh and new for the viewers. But still, we'd like to break some news when we can.
And so you may have seen that interview on Den of Geek in its written form. The audio of that interview will be shared on Sci-Fi Fidelity later in the month, so it will be a little bit dated at that point. Maybe we'll throw in a little bit of show discussion, too, to go along with it. But we'll also share that here in the feed once it's aired on Den of Geeks, because of course they get priority on that. But yeah, we're very excited. Hopefully maybe we'll even get to talk to some of the actors and share those with you here on the Sandbox as well. So looking forward to seeing where that goes. But I guess we should go ahead and get into our episode discussion.
All right. So, you know, obviously exciting to be back. Season 6, episode 1. And there are still some things, and I certainly look at this as a positive, that I'm not totally clear on. So hopefully as we discuss this episode, you can help make them clearer for
That's
me.
That's what a podcast is for.
Exactly. But we've got one group on Earth, and Director Mac, Yo-Yo, May, and a new cast of side characters are at the lighthouse running ops from there. And one of the first things that strikes me about Mac, and I know this might come as a surprise to you and everybody out there in listener land, how did I get from really, I don't want to say not liking Mac, but tolerating Mac, to now loving him as a director in one episode?
Yeah, well, I think he got the best development in this episode, where you got to see him having his leadership skills developed and where he's getting his mojo from, so to speak. And I think it really played very well. And of course, once you take out the factor of him disobeying orders, you know, if he's giving the orders, there's no chance for him to disappoint you in that respect.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see how he handles any of his underlings that disobey orders.
Yeah. Hypocritical much?
Yeah. So, and maybe he won't. Maybe he'll have a more even-handed approach. But we also have a group in space. And do we have any listeners that are really into Daisy and Simmons when they
work together?
Maybe one or two.
Yes. Okay.
So we've got Daisy and Simmons, and they're with Davis and Piper. And that's maybe my favorite aspect of this episode. And it's not just because Daisy and Simmons are in it. I think we all love Davis and Piper, and they've really gone from just really kind of bit characters that each week we wondered whether they'd survive. And yet here they are, and it appears maybe they're going to play a little bit more prominent role this season.
Which we've been wishing for quite some time. I mean, I think Davis slipped under the radar, even though he did some pretty important things a couple seasons ago in season 4. But Piper, as soon as she came on the scene, we loved her, and we wanted to see more of her. And she did get underutilized a little bit, and I didn't love her arc last season. But yeah, I'm hoping we'll see more of that. There's even a little bit of a subtle chemistry between those two, which I'm kind of digging at the very start.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that little interplay, especially when she offers to bet, I can't even remember now exactly what they're betting on. And he's like, well, wait a minute, you win either way.
Yeah, I don't have to pay up.
Yeah, you're catching on there. But the other thing that really comes out of this episode is that Davis piloting Zephyr, I don't want to say he gives May a run for her money, but he gives May a run for her money. He is a damn good pilot.
And because we have this 1 year time jump, you can take that into account because he's had a year to practice dodging asteroids.
And then finally in cryo, at least at the beginning, we've got Fitz, and I don't know what the heck that thing is that cut the ship in half long before schedule, right? I mean, he says that it's, 72 years early?
Right. And of course, I find myself wondering, did this happen in the original set of events? I actually thought, does this have something to do with the MCU? Because I'm behind, admittedly, on my viewing of Avengers movies. But I don't think it was tied into that. And so I find myself thinking, I bet you this is actually, this whole arc with Fitz, especially with the post-credits scene, may have been what forged him into that hard-ass assassin that we actually saw last season in the future. He's been shaped by whatever experience he's about to have that we're going to see unfold.
Okay. So we know it's been a year since the end of last season. You know, as I mentioned at the top of the discussion, Mac is the new director. And I absolutely adore the fact that he reveres Coulson so much that he sits there and watches his training advice holograms that I guess Coulson left them deliberately. I don't think that he just found them in a drawer somewhere, but he's so much more level-headed, good leader. And I forget who it is that even says that everybody on the team buys into you as the leader. So that's really good to hear. And I'm really liking that a lot.
And, you know, there's kind of a parallel between what happened when Coulson took over as director from Fury and what Mac is going through here, taking over from Coulson, including the toolbox and the advice being given in holographic form.
I forgot about the toolbox.
Yeah, that's the little cube thing that he's using to project the image.
Does that mean he has Fury holograms as well?
Well, it might not be addressing Mac directly, but yeah, I assume he's got a lot of director type secrets in there.
Okay. All right. Now, I don't know if we're going to get to see more of Keller, who obviously likes Yo-Yo. Apparently, they've been a secret couple for a while now. And what do you think about the little mini arc that Mac doesn't know about them? Are you good with that?
I'm okay with it from the standpoint of he's being a bit of a workaholic. And so we didn't see, it happened off stage, that Yo-Yo drifted away from him a little bit and she, you know, couldn't count on furthering their relationship a bit. I'm holding out a little bit of judgment between her and Keller. I actually thought it worked okay, the way that they acted together. And so I'm willing to cut them some slack. And in fact, the scene between Yo-Yo and May discussing what's going on with Keller was one of the only lighthearted moments in the episode. So for that reason alone, I enjoyed it.
Okay. I mean, I guess I just don't like the surreptitious approach they're taking, keeping it from him. I don't see why they feel the need to do that. I mean, Mac has never been a violent person. It's not as if she tells him that she's seeing Keller, he's going to start smashing things. So I just hope they don't go that route.
Yeah.
That once he finds out, he becomes a different person.
Yeah. And I hope they tell him sooner rather than later, because it did seem like they were leaning in that direction, even in this episode.
Right. Now, I love the recruitment of Dr. Benson to create a new S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy from the ground up. And I love his approach and his feelings of reticence of signing on to S.H.I.E.L.D. because he just sees them as a group that chases boogeymen.
Yeah. And the fact that he's friends and colleagues with Andrew, and that's how May knows him, was a nice little touch. But I also didn't think of the fact that when you have S.H.I.E.L.D. going through all of its problems that it had in the past few seasons of being dissolved and then being branded a criminal organization, of course the Academy isn't going to be bringing in new recruits. So you have to start all over from scratch. And if he was a colleague of Andrew's, then he seems like he would be eminently qualified, even with the problems with alcohol and the age that we're dealing with. So yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with this character, who already has a bit of Professor Emeritus air about him.
Right. And I think anytime you have an organization like S.H.I.E.L.D., it might be easy to get caught up in the militaristic end of it. And Mac says, we've got plenty of soldier types. I don't think he uses that exact word, but that's what he means. We need more intellectual types. Our two best minds are out in space somewhere. So he recognizes that, and that hopefully will be what Dr. Benson is able to bring into the S.H.I.E.L.D. family as well.
Well, yeah, because I think it's going to be a while, based on the space plot line of this premiere, before Fitz and Simmons return to the fold. So we definitely need someone to act in their role with whatever drama unfolds with the dimensional travelers, or whatever you want to call them, on Earth.
Right. So, I mean, who are these guys that are showing up around the world? I guess we're talking multiverse here.
I think so, but I wonder if making that judgment call is too soon, because the only reason I think it's a dimensional crossing is because of the presence of someone who looks just like Coulson. But I keep getting the impression from the too many spoilers you mentioned out there about the character of Sarge that it's a completely different person. And so maybe we don't have enough evidence to call it a parallel world scenario. So we'll have to wait and see.
Right. And I think at this point, since we're only in episode one, the fact that we don't know can be considered a good thing. You don't have to tell us everything at once.
And that's the thing. There's a ton of information in this episode. They really crammed a lot, and it didn't feel overly full, but it had the action, it had the plot development, and not too much exposition. But man, did they pack a lot of new conflict and things to get excited about in this premiere.
Right. Now, you know, as we're in ops at the lighthouse and we're watching the big board, it's sort of difficult to figure out what it is we're looking at there. And Keller has a theory about what he calls anomalies, but then he's told that we overused that term last season. But his theory that these anomalies, or whatever we're calling them, I think Fox had a few ideas, all of which were shot down by Mac, but that they're occurring on ley lines or energy lines around the world. And that's, of course, what happens with the one that they target in Indiana. But you know, as we said, that's one of the mysteries at this point. Who are these three that come through? They call them crossings. So I guess that's what we should be calling them.
Right. And what is their goal? What do they have in mind? Do they know where they are? And do they know what it is that this world might mean that's different from what their world is all about? Or are they imposing their own viewpoint based on whatever rough existence they appear to be going through wherever they came from?
Right. Now, you know, a couple of cool things. One is that they're aware that if the crossing opens up on something that this world has structurally built, there are going to be problems. So, for instance, that's why they've got to blow up the museum. That's why the one guy gets trapped inside that cinder block wall. But you said, why are they coming through? Do they know where they're coming? And I guess I feel, and maybe this is my experience with science fiction, that they absolutely know where they're going, that there's something that this Earth has that their Earth needs.
Oh, I like that idea. I agree with you that they know what it is they're getting into. But I think there's a lot of different possibilities besides getting something that this world has that they don't have. But I like that idea from the standpoint that they definitely seem to have gone through some rough times, and not just because their genes are beat up or whatever. They just seem like they've, you know, lived rougher lives than the people here on our Earth.
Right. And I mean, once they blow up the museum, that apparently creates the portal, and this huge armored vehicle drives through, crashes into a lot of the shield vehicles, and out walks a guy that looks exactly like Coulson, but of course isn't. And this is, we assume, Sarge. They mention, where's Sarge? Did he get through yet? So I think we know the guy that looks like Coulson, that's played by Clark Gregg, is now Sarge. Says he's never heard of S.H.I.E.L.D. He shoots. I hope he didn't kill Keller, but I'm afraid Keller may have been a red shirt here.
Oh, yeah, I hope so, too. But he was defending one of his own, Sarge was, and the character known as Butterfly, which I don't think they referred her to as that, but she did mention some things about now he can become a butterfly. She's a little bit crazy. I was very excited to see Brooke Williams playing that character, who is Hannah from 12 Monkeys. And in fact, she's looking very Hannah-like here in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So those of you who have watched 12 Monkeys, you probably recognized that character. And I think she's going to be sticking around for a while. I've noticed her in some photos that are going deeper into the season. So I can't wait to see where these characters go, because obviously they're going to be at odds, you would think, with Mac and his group.
Yeah. And when you say crazy, you mean crazy hot. So
yes.
All right. Now, Zephyr has crash landed on some planet in search of, I mean, they're searching for Fitz, obviously. And the one thing I will say, and I know this is probably completely socially unacceptable, I torturing looks good on Daisy and Simmons.
Oh, you like seeing them interrogate a prisoner?
Especially Simmons. And look, I've always loved Simmons. I mean, obviously my love for Daisy transcends all, but I love the new Simmons. And again, I think that's one of the things that's so special about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is that we've seen these characters grow up. And sometimes they grow up to be people that are good, sometimes not good, sometimes sort of in the middle. And it's that gray area that I think is just so compelling. And look, we talk about Mac not following orders. That's exactly what Simmons decides to do in this scenario.
Yeah, she definitely pulled a Mac here at the end of it. But the journey seems credible. And even though Simmons and Fitz have gone through things that were very similar to this, at first I was a little bothered by them essentially reusing the missing Simmons plot from, I think it was season three. I can't remember now. But, you know, Fitz was the same way. He wouldn't take no for an answer when he was sure that they could find Simmons after she went through that obelisk. So here we're using that same thing from Simmons' point of view, but she sells it so well. And so even though she does pull a Mac, I think she gets away with it a little bit better and doesn't take a hit the way Mac might have in the past from us.
All right. And I definitely agree with that. And, you know, they track down the half of the ship that the one guy they were torturing apparently bought as salvage. And as he says, he bought it fair and square. But they find the empty cryopod. And of course, Simmons is initially crushed. Not surprised at all that she climbs in. A little surprised she closes the lid.
Yeah, it was a little bit morbid, but I think that fit with what Daisy was discussing with Piper and Davis about. She was a little worried, and to have her doing that while Daisy was saying those things kind of fit nicely.
Right. And she jumps out. She's got a clue and a theory of where Fitz went based on, you know, this little ID kind of label. Maybe it's the serial number or whatever, but she decides that's where Fitz would have gone so that he could go back in cryo. All right. Sort of makes sense. But the other three feel they need to go home, regroup, and then go back out. And I love when she says that Fitz is family. And again, I forget which one of the other ones says, well, you know, we all have families. Davis has a child he hasn't seen. And she just doesn't care.
Yeah, it's just overwhelming her, this desire to see Fitz. And you can see that she's thinking about what they're saying. But it's just too dangerous. And I like that they set up the fact that they have to scheme just to get fuel. So they're out here way far away from any kind of resources to keep Zephyr going. And this planet that she wants to go to is way farther than they've even gone in the past. And by the way, I like that they're using as their drive system the Kree device that they used last season to jump about in space. That really works well for me as a reason to explain how Zephyr is able to get so far from Earth. But apparently that far is something new, even for what they've been doing, really far.
Right. And apparently Daisy has gained a lot more control over her quake abilities.
Yeah, I loved that.
Where she just quakes apart their weapons.
And that's straight out of the comics, yeah. Because I wondered when that would come. So that was a great development for her powers. And again, it makes sense because a year has passed.
Right. And a great visual. I mean, obviously, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has never scrimped on the visual special effects through six seasons. But apparently she's also been putting her power on display as a warning during their travelers. And I'm not sure whether Gemma is pointing that out because she and Daisy are butting heads over whether they should follow Fitz at this point. And she's trying to maybe question Daisy's leadership at this point, but there's probably some truth in it.
Yeah, a little bit, but I think it bears mentioning, and they certainly bring this up to Simmons, that they used to have a lot more than just the four of them, and people have jumped ship the farther out that they got. And, you know, they had to get back to whatever they wanted to do on Earth. And so they've had to continue to make the Confederacy think that there's still a full crew on board and that they're as threatening as they seem. And so basically Daisy is carrying the full weight of that reputation.
Right. So what's the Confederacy demanding this time? Obviously we don't know specifically, but it's going to be something.
Yeah. And I like that they've created this culture out in space that feels a little bit like Guardians of the Galaxy, but expands upon it in its own way. And I'm interested to see what they do with it, because there were some cool beginnings of a kind of Star Wars-like culture in the previous season, in the first half of the season, when we were still in the future. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that.
Just no talking raccoons, please.
Yeah.
And then we get the epilogue, and S.H.I.E.L.D., look, you and I have been saying this for five seasons now. The epilogue on S.H.I.E.L.D. is always awesome. So now we've got some version of Fitz speaking in an alien language, injects something into his neck. His eyes look, I don't even know how to describe them. But
Bruce Banner about to become the Hulk.
So what the heck is Fitz at this point? Is this the Fitz that we know? Is this a guy that looks like Fitz that's from some other dimension?
Oh, I wouldn't take it that far, but I do think that this little scene, like I said at the beginning, seems like it might explain something that really did happen to him without Simmons and Daisy able to come searching for him, that might have developed his character the way we saw it in the future last season. So I definitely want to see what kind of things he goes through to make him that way. What's he up to now working on the workshop? Because, you know, he's putting his skills to good use. And why does he need whatever that thing is that he injected into his neck to survive, maybe? To keep a tough veneer to survive out in the great wilderness of space? Who knows?
Right. And I just wonder if this concerted effort on Simmons' part to find him is going to turn out to be one of these situations that be careful what you wish for, because it may not be what you expect.
Right. And he still thinks that he's going to the future to save them from whatever time period they've traveled to. And so what's going to be different, because this is a Fitz that hasn't gotten married to Simmons like we saw happen. He doesn't know about Deke, their grandson, and all that stuff. So it's going to be a very different Fitz for her and for us.
Well, I don't know about you. Well, I do know about you. I am so looking forward to next week and the subsequent 12 weeks. And I don't know if we know yet, are they going to run 12 consecutive episodes, or is it going to be like,
yeah, I don't know,
broken up the way it always has been in the past?
It's different when it's the summer, so I feel like they could go straight if they wanted to. But yeah, I guess we'll find out what the schedule is going to be. But I like that it's 13 episodes. That's probably going to be tighter writing because of that. Or you could think of season 6 and 7, which season 7 is being filmed right now, as two different pods of a 26 episode season, because that's essentially the same thing if you just take out the fact that they're splitting the seasons up with a long hiatus between them. So definitely looking forward to this season. The premiere was spot on, exactly what we needed coming back from such a long wait. Got us all back excited again. And it's not that I wasn't expecting them to knock it out of the park, but they certainly did so. But one area that might have been, according to some opinions, lacking is Cole sass and sass in general. I think the only sass that I saw really was between May and Yo-Yo during their discussion of Keller. So because of that, we do not have a Cole sass report from Faith. She took a week off, and we discussed that it might be a possibility that she'd have to see what happens. Maybe they'll be back with some sass next week. We shall see. But don't forget that that's something that you can vote on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm. So we'll look forward to that in the future. But at this point, remember, as we mentioned, we're going to be recording our feedback separately from this podcast. So you'll hear the listener feedback separately, with Dave and I sharing some of the different contributions that you sent into us, and each of us will comment on the ones that we received. And then we'll see if we'll probably return to our regular way of doing the feedback next week. So here's the feedback we received from the season 6 premiere.
All right, let's start off with an audio feedback sent in by JT.
Well, it's nice to see they seem to be following the rules of time set out in Endgame, for better or worse. The Marty McFly rules of engagement were always a bit hard to follow. Your past is your past, even if you travel into the past, and that becomes your future. Hey, Enoch lives! Cool. Can't wait to find out more about our favorite Chronicom. I wonder, since Fitz now has a new future, whether he'll go dark this time, or if Gemma can save him. It took Avengers 11 years to set up Endgame, but Agents only one episode to set up this season. So let's see what we know. The Confederacy is policing the Star Lanes, and already we have invaders from the fifth dimension. Can't wait till next week. Count me in.
All right, JT, like you, I was surprised and absolutely pleased to see Enoch in this episode, and I don't know, like the rest of you, whether we're going to see him again, but it would be cool if we do. But I love that you bring up about Fitz, and since he has a new future, will he go dark? And, you know, we've seen dark Fitz, at least what dark Fitz looks like, and I'm not sure I want to go through that again, but having said that, dark Fitz can be kind of a badass, so I guess we'll see.
All right, that was some great audio feedback to lead off the listener feedback segment. But we also heard from Taltos, and Taltos has some really cool insights to share as always. She says, the name Tinker mentioned, Pechakutik, apparently means he who overturns space and time, or Earthshaker in the language of the Incans. The Aeonian script seen on the bomb that Pax set out, screen capture attached, which we will of course include in the show notes at goldenspiralmedia.com, is the same alien language seen throughout the lighthouse where the Kree reigned. And for those of you who are not tracking with those names, Tinker and Pax are the people that are working with Sarge from, we assume, some other dimension. Taltos goes on to say, combining these two facts, I'm theorizing that Pachakutik is the name of a Kree that conquered Sarge's Earth. Given the arrogance we saw with Cassius last season, I could definitely see one of them taking the name of the Incan king credited with building Machu Picchu. I wonder if Sarge's group is there to stop Pachakutik rather than just be bad guys. Tinker's words seemed more of a warning than a threat, and Jaco took the time to warn that young girl away from the museum. There also seemed to be a lot of people starting to exit the museum just as S.H.I.E.L.D. arrived, as if Jaco's team had told them to leave. Even Snowflake's "Don't worry, you'll be a butterfly" seemed more consoling than menacing. I actually thought it sounded a little bit crazy or insane. And when Sarge shot Agent Fox, the closed captioning said, "Icer discharges." Though I guess we'll have to wait until next episode to see if Fox actually survived. At the very least, it does not seem as though death and destruction are their primary goals. And I would have to agree with you on that, Taltos. It seems like we don't know enough to call them out-and-out villains at this point, even though they might seem menacing. Taltos goes on to say, I also suspect the injection Fitz gave himself was specifically designed to change his eyes and is not a side effect of something else. Oh, interesting. Note that he didn't take the injection until he was called upon to leave his room. Possibly this was something Enoch cooked up to disguise the fact that Fitz is human. Ah, I like that. So he's changing his eyes to make it look like he's a different alien race. Very cool. And of course, you know, like I said, the screenshot that Taltos included of the alien script on the bombs that were set up in the museum is included on our show notes for this podcast at goldenspiralmedia.com. So check those out. And thank you, as always, to Taltos for those great insights.
Daryl Washington sent us in some feedback, and he says, I thought it was a very good return for the show. I am disappointed that Mac and Elena no longer seem to be an item, but I am happy that Daisy and Gemma have teamed up with Piper and the other guy whose name escapes me. That would be Davis. I have missed seeing them all on my TV. I do love the MCU, but I'm glad the show is doing its own separate thing. It's all connected. Hasn't been true for a long time, and I always felt it was mostly one-sided. So thank you, Daryl. And yeah, you know, as you, I'm sure you know, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, which I know you have, that while I love the MCU movies, I don't love them to death. It will certainly be a long time before I see Endgame. So, you know, like you, I love that S.H.I.E.L.D. has its own separate universe within the MCU family. But thanks for the feedback, Daryl.
And I'm just going to tag along with something that Dave said there. I haven't seen Endgame either. So that may surprise some of our listeners. Dave and I are not huge fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general. I try to keep up as best I can just to be informed. And I know Dave does the same. But we really are Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s fans for its own sake. So the fact that it doesn't actually connect to the MCU does not distress us all that much. In fact, we kind of like it. So thank you to all of those who contributed to our listener feedback segment this week. We hope more of you jump on board next week, and perhaps we'll go back to the traditional way of doing feedback where Dave and I are together during that part. But we hope everyone had a great Mother's Day. And at this point, we'll turn it back to the Mike and Dave of the past to finish up the podcast. All right. Well, thank you so much to those of you who contributed feedback for the season 6 premiere. We really enjoyed hearing from some of you again that we haven't heard from in a while, of course. So it's good to be reunited with you, our listening audience. And the feedback segment, Dave, is just such a valuable part of the podcast, especially since we really count on you guys to almost be as long as our discussion for our podcast. And hopefully a lot of people are tuning in for season 6. And season 7 next year, which is already guaranteed.
Right. And even though we haven't been broadcasting a podcast for over a year, there has been a fair number of good discussions on the Facebook group.
Right. We've been keeping it going, especially during Avengers Endgame. So I'm always grateful to those people who are engaged that way on our Facebook group. So we really have enjoyed the community that's built up around the Sandbox, and I hope you guys have enjoyed it as well. But that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @S.H.I.E.L.D. And our popular Facebook group is, of course, at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM, which is also where you can vote on the Colsas report.
And Mike and I will be back next week with our discussion of episode 2 of season 6 entitled Window of Opportunity. And remember, after the episode airs, you can head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or you can even call 304-837-2278.
And we may be at season 6, but we still would love to see some ratings and reviews of The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts. And let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So remember, if you return next week, we might even let you live to cry about it.